Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Welcome to Global Wicca Radio, a pre-Parliament event from the Parliament of World Religion hosted by the Karelian Education Ministries. I am your host for the evening, Reverend Moya Blackman. And what I have for you this evening is an interview with Archpriestess Belladonna Laveau of Aquarian Tabernacle Church, interviewing Oberon Zell, followed by an interview with Reverend Gavin Bone. Enjoy.
Hi, this is Belladonna Laveau, the matriarch of the Aquarian Tabernacle Church, back with you for the Global Wiccan Summit. We have Oberon Zell. Oberon Zell is a renowned wizard and elder in the worldwide magical community. In 1967, he was the first to apply the term pagan to the newly emerging nature religions of the 1960s. Oberon founded the first legal pagan church, Church of All Worlds, CAW.org, www.CAW.org, and through his publication of Green Egg Magazine, 1968 to present, Oberon was instrumental in the coalescence of the modern pagan movement. In 1970, he had a profound vision of the living earth, which he published as the earliest version of the Gaia thesis. In the 1980s, Oberon and his lifetime mate, Morning Glory, resurrected authentic living unicorns and led a divine expedition to New Guinea to solve the mystery of the mermaids. In 1990, MG coined the term polyamory and launched another significant movement. Oberon creates altar figurines and jewelry of gods and goddesses, mythical creatures, and magic symbols. He is the author of Grimoire for the Apprentice Wizard, Companion for the Apprentice Wizard, Creating Circles and Ceremonies, A Wizard's Bestiary, Green Egg Omelet, and The Wizard and the Witch. He's also the founder and headmaster of the online Gray School of Wizardry, www.grayschooled, and that's with an E, G-R-E-Y, school.com. A world traveler to mystic sites, Oberon has just returned from a month-long trip to Guatemala in July and August of 2018, presenting workshops on quantum consciousness and participating in Mayan ceremonies. He is currently on indefinite walkabout, driving across the country to meet with people. Welcome so much, Oberon. I'm so glad we could catch you on the road.
Well, glad to be here, finally connecting in.
Oh, I know how hard it is to get you on the road. Your time is just not predictable. I really appreciate it. We are discussing the Global Wiccan Summit. Sorry about that. I'm sure they'll get that downstairs. Yes, okay. The Global Wicca Summit. And what we are doing is talking about Wicca as it approaches this global religion kind of critical mass as it has. You know, you've seen it from the very beginning. 1968 is, I was three. I'm not going to tell how old I was. That was a long time ago.
Well, yeah, likewise.
You can do the math if you're, you know, if you're so inclined. But that is a really amazing perspective of where we started, what happened, you know, through the flower children of the 60s and then the crazy uptight 80s and then through the millennium. And now you've seen a lot of changes. What trends do you see happening and what kind of things would you project that is going to happen in the future based on these trends? What challenges do we face?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think our biggest challenge is probably going to be dealing with our increasing success and wider spread popularity. I know there are many people in the craft community who feel that the popularity is diluting the mystique and mystery of the craft. In the earliest days, it was very much a very secret society kind of a thing, you know, and that was its allure and its appeal to many people. And it was you know, there were books or interviews that would be the secrets of witchcraft or the mysteries revealed, and it was all very scandalous and hush-hush and all that stuff. And over time, it's shifted a lot. The perspective has gone less from this, you know, very initiatory, secretive thing to something that's very widespread and public with hundreds of books and many, many people, probably the majority of people claiming to practice the craft these days are solitaries, you know, who are not affiliated with a group or a coven. And that was almost unheard of in the early days. You had to find a group to train you and initiate you. And that was the whole thing. You just couldn't imagine doing this on your own. But as books came out and popular media has also picked up on it, the media has shifted. The media has shifted in its mythology. Back in the early days, the mythology around witchcraft was also supported by the early people who came out as witches. People like Sybil Leek and Louise Huebner and Justine Glass, who were some of the early people to write biographies of witch, all supported the popular mythology that we saw in things like I Married a Witch and Bewitched, in which witches were not seen as a religion or a culture or something you could join, but almost a subspecies, sort of apart from normal people, who were referred to as mortals in the mythology. And it was said that, well, witches were immortal, or they couldn't fall in love, or they couldn't cry, and they had these mysterious powers that they could wiggle their noses or point their fingers. But there was no philosophy about it. There was no, even those things, even in Bewitched, you know, you never had the celebrations of the Sabbats or the Esbats. You never really had coven meetings or rituals that we think of today as being foundational to it. But that was what was believed in. And Sybil Leek, Louise Glass, Louise Huebner and Justine Glass, they all talked about how you had to be inherited this, and it was a family thing only, and you couldn't join up. And that was how it came until Gardner initiated Buckland and sent him over to America to bring the craft to the colonies, as it were. And at that time, when we first made connection with witches, we being Church of All Worlds in the early pagan community that was developing in the early 60s, we had no idea of witchcraft as a pagan religion at all. It was only this mythology. So it was somewhat a surprise to meet actual witches. And when I made my first pilgrimage to the East Coast in 1971 and met Ray Buckland and Leo Martello and all the early people there, it was after reading the book Witches USA by Susan Roberts. And in that time, the New York witchcraft scene was pretty much straight out of Bell, Book, and Candle, the movie, you know. That's what it was really like there, you know. It was like, you know, secretive and nightclubs and people. And she wrote this whole book about it. And then I went out there and I met with her, and she took me around and introduced me to these folks. And we all became great friends and really hit it off. And it was because of that early meeting in 71 that an increasing number of these folks decided to identify as pagan and become part of the larger pagan community that had already been going on for some time before that. That was a very interesting thing. The next result of that, almost immediately, was the formation of the Pagan Way. And the idea that behind that was somehow that paganism would be sort of the general laity, and that witches would be the priesthood of this laity, which did not sit very well with a lot of the pagan groups that were not Wiccan, such as the Druids and the Kemetics and the Hellenics and the Norse pagans and all the rest of them. They were, wait a minute, we're not witches, you know. But that became a popular mythos among witchcraft, is that somehow we were all witches, and the witches were the priesthood, and the rest of us were just the laity. And so that's taken some time to sort out a little bit. And gradually, from that initial meeting, more and more of the witches came to identify as pagans. But it remained controversial for a number of years, and there may very well be some out there who don't think of themselves that way. I know there was resistance early on from some of the Gardnerians in particular. But Ray Buckland was right on board with it, and we were great friends up until his death just the last year. So.
We've been having discussions about the list of questions that I saw you that I sent to you on my Facebook page, and in Sacred Cauldron, the school on Second Life. You also, your grade school is also on Second Life. Your people have been coming over and participating with us. It has been fantastic conversation.
Oh, good, wonderful, wonderful. That's the whole idea.
Yeah, they've been offered opportunities to present, and some of them have taken advantage of it. And it's been great. A lot of meetings of minds. But one of the things that they talked about was Witch or Wicca. And people brought up a lot of different perspectives. And there was a lot of resentment about witches thinking everybody was Wiccan or Wiccans thinking everybody was Wiccan and everybody wanting to be an individual and recognized for who they are. I imagine, that does come from that history. Great to know that that's where it came from.
Well, there's also been a fundamental divergence of the mythology around witchcraft itself. If you look at the history of witchcraft up until modern times, it was never regarded as a religion. The witchcraft was never the religion of the community or the village. The witch was not a priestess or a religious functionary at all. It was a craft. It was a practice. The witches' status was like other craft people in the community, like the village blacksmith or the village potter. The witch was sort of the village midwife and herbalist and all, you know. And but there was no concept of it being a religion, and there was no indication of rites and rituals other than occasional mention of gatherings for Sabbats and stuff. But all the ritual stuff that we now associate with the craft wasn't a part of that history up until modern times. Leland Zaradia, I think, laid some foundational concepts, which was really very good. And the revival of witchcraft in the 50s by Gardner built on that. And Gardner declared it to be the old religion. And the major motivation for that was to gain the protection under the new religious protection laws, especially in the United States, although Gardner wasn't thinking of the United States. But it was just after they had repealed the anti-witchcraft statutes in England that he came out with this stuff, with witchcraft, the old religion and all. So we have that. We have that trend of witchcraft as the craft or practice, which is more like shamanism, you know. And in shamanism, wherever it has existed, the village shaman is not, you know, this is not what the villagers are having as a worship, as a religious, you know. This person doesn't lead them in rituals, they do a practice. But there is also the pagan roots that Leland touched in his Romano-Etruscan remains and other writings, as well as in Aradia, of the old pagan religions, of the temples and the things that we talk about, the pagan splendor of ancient Greece and Rome. And that's a very different kind of a thing than the village witchcraft. It involved, rituals and theologies and pantheons of deities and ceremonial stuff and priesthoods and all of that. And in that context, it's very important, I think, to note that only pagan religions have priestesses. And I think the restoration of priestesses in the modern world is one of our most important functions that we've been doing. And I'm proud to say that the Church of All Worlds was the first legal church in the last couple of thousand years to legally ordain women as priestesses, which I think is very important, really.
That is very important. You know, one of the big questions was church or coven. And a lot of people present the idea that we don't need churches in paganism and in Wicca in general, that it's establishing the same problem that we're running away from. But you did one of the first churches. Can you tell us why you chose to do that?
Well, this has been an interesting thing. I run into people all the time who reject the notion of religion altogether. They prefer to think of the term as spirituality, and they say that they're spiritual but not religious. And I'm very uncomfortable with that. I'm not really a spiritual person, but I'm a religious person. Spirituality is what you do all by yourself. That's your personal practice and thing, and that's all very cool, and you have your altar and your devotions and whatever you do, and that's your spiritual practice. But that's not a religion. A religion is what you do in community with other people. and to lose that sense of the religious community of, and that's what a church is. A church is a religious community. Now, a coven is kind of like that. A coven is a congregation, but it's not actually the same as a church. And it's very well and probably appropriate for witches not to think in terms of churches. Wiccan church, such as ATC, is almost an oxymoron in a sense, unless you have to take into account the evolution of the modern movement, which is moving in this direction. But in other pagan traditions, all of the other ones really, a church is a very important element in ancient Greece and in Rome and Egypt and, you know, among the Druids and other peoples. The fuller organization of a church and a religious community is vital to the whole thing because it includes the theology and the group practices and the mythology and the stories that are shared and the rituals, especially the seasonal rituals. I think the greatest strength, most powerful thing that paganism is bringing to the wider world is the wheel of the year, the whole concept of the seasonal cycles that are not based on the lives and deaths of saints or events in the specific liturgical year of that particular denomination, but linked to the cycles of the seasons that are universal, the solstices, the equinoxes, the cross-quarter days between them. These are universal all over the world, no matter what tradition you may have, among all people who are tied to the earth and the seasons, which is what paganism is all about. Pagan means people of the land, people of the country, and emphasizes that context, which is why I think that paganism is such an important and powerful thing, and I don't want to lose it or have it be subsumed under witchcraft, which is a very specific type of thing. It's a practice, and a, you know, whether it's a religious practice or a spiritual practice or just a craft, people can argue out among themselves, and many witches just want to be that. They want to do the little village stuff. You know, they want to do spells for people and do healings and do that kind of work, which is what witchcraft was all along. But there's others who want to be priestesses, really, and they long for a temple context and a temple practice, and they want to create rituals and have lots of people show them. And this is what's being fostered by the movement of festivals and events and gatherings, which is probably the most significant part in the history of modern paganism, is the festivals, in which people of many different traditions come together and celebrate together and share their traditions and rituals and stuff with each other.
Yeah.
And of course, this is where polyamory comes into the whole picture too. But to continue with the questions you're answering and then, or asking, and then we can get into the polyamory part.
Well, I was going to say, I really agree with you that if you are not going to festivals, you're missing a huge part of pagan culture and the wider community. And I really like your point about churches, that they create that community that supports you when you need that help, so you don't feel like you're out here alone. Humans are
exactly
social creatures. They want to feel like they have somebody with them. And I think that our tendency as humans to want people to look just like us and be just like us is giving way to we need this variety. And I really appreciate how you put it so beautifully, that it supports the many different ways that you can reach deity. And that is something to take into consideration when you start deciding who should get to and who should not get to do different things when it's involving religion.
Right.
One of the things that you stepped out and did was the polyamory movement. I know that Morning Glory coined the term polyamory, and it has really given our people a freedom and a role model and a framework that they didn't have before, and it has changed a lot of people's lives for you know, good and better and indifferent. So why don't you tell us about that, because that's a big part of Wicca that didn't originally start.
Well, it didn't. And I think part of that comes into, well, the nature of paganism is polytheistic, polydiversity, polycultural, multicultural. The Church of All Worlds, specifically, when we set that up, was intentionally designed to be an inclusive religion and church, which was pretty unique because virtually every other one was intended to be exclusive, to say, well, these are our people here, and then there's all those others out there that are not us. And we deliberately tried to set up a church which was inclusive to anybody who wanted to be here and could play well with others is welcome. And we regarded it as throwing a great big potluck banquet and inviting everybody to bring their best dishes and put them on the table, you know. And I think that that particular vision and model, I've really worked diligently through my life and through publications of The Green Egg and my books and stuff to foster that viewpoint of that, the sense of pride in paganism. In fact, right here where I'm in right now in Kansas City, tomorrow is Pagan Pride Day. And I've attended a number of those where all the different groups come together and march together in celebration of unity and diversity, which I think is just such an important element there. And polyamory is a part of that, because as we started coming together in festivals and gatherings, just like it was in the old days when you'd have a pagan gathering, which was totally separate from the witchcraft thing, keep in mind here, but the villages would be pagan. And when, at the festivals, at the harvest time particular, or at Beltane, or whatever you were having, all the different people from all the different villages would all come together in a big marketplace, and it was your dating pool. It's where you were expected to meet people and fall in love and find your future mates. You'd go there with that expectation in mind. And this is what's happened in the pagan festivals, is that people come together and they meet people and they fall in love and they form liaisons and relationships.
That's where
and,
I met
exactly. Well, it's where I met Morning Glory. You know, many of us, that's our meeting places. And the in the larger context of the pagan polytheism and poly-everything, it's a good place for people who are themselves naturally inclined to be polyamorous to meet multiple partners. And what has happened, and some of us have fostered this intentionally with our larger utopian vision in mind, is forming networks like mycelial networks that permeate the pagan community of lovers in various groups and such. Morning Glory and I certainly did a fair job of that when we were together, and I'm still continuing that in my travels today. And for your listeners, I'm on walkabout. I'm definitely everything I own is in storage, and I'm driving around the country, and I'm spending time to visit and meet up with various of the lovers I've known over many years, some over decades, as well as some who are new. But all of them are people that I've met at festivals in gatherings, and we form relationships and still love each other and don't really get to spend much time together except once a year at festivals where we come together and say, here we are.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. A polytheistic movement like paganism is just a natural place for it. The same as the different attitudes about sexuality have made the pagan movement a safe place for people who are gay or transsexual or, you know, any other kind of diversity, because we cherish diversity. And again, this was something that was intentionally developed in the earliest days when we were looking at how can we do religion better than it's been done. And the whole mono paradigm was something that we felt we could do better by introducing a paradigm of diversity. So there's a little hit on that.
Well, that is really incredible. I'm so impressed with all of the things that you have managed to accomplish. It's just unbelievable. But such a gift to the pagan and Wiccan community that you have all of this history. Are you writing all of this down so that it can be passed down? Are you working on your memoirs as you do your walkabout? What is this walkabout all about?
Well, I found myself kind of freed up over the last 2.5 years, well, last for 2 years, for a solid 2 years, from November of 2015 to November of 2017. I'd opened up the Academy of Arcana, a gathering place in Santa Cruz that was all of my stuff, the archives, the of 50 years of paganism and museum and library and all that stuff. And we set up a really great place with a library and museum and offices and a store. And we invited people to come and give talks and presentations. We had a great presentation area. And nobody came. Nobody supported it. We brought in amazing speakers, and two or three people would show up. And it was a disaster. It just did not work in Santa Cruz. it just wasn't supported. So after 2 years of this and going completely broke and in debt trying to support the place, we came to the realization that we could not renew the lease for a third year. And I'm actually still having to pay off considerable of where we left off from that. And then it was a question, well, now what? You know, we put everything in storage, so it all went into storage. And I realized I didn't have a home anymore. I was simply staying in a room in a bed and breakfast with some very dear friends who were kind enough to invite me to move in with them. But it was their home, and they just had a room, you know. It wasn't my home. And I didn't have a partner anymore since Morning Glory had died. I had, you know, a network of lovers who I would see occasionally who would visit me or I would visit them. But it's kind of hard to have invite, you know, lovers to come and visit when you only have a room in somebody else's house. So that wasn't entirely effective. And you know, at times in my life, I've had to go through major transformations and just try to figure out, well, now what? You know, and after Morning Glory died, it was a big one because we'd had 40 years together in an amazing, incredible life and all the stuff. And we wrote the book with the memoirs of our life is called The Wizard and the Witch. And it's available through Llewellyn, and it's our whole life together. And it came out just a few months before she died. The second edition will have to have a little epilogue about the final time and her burial and all that, which is quite spectacular. A green burial on our land that established it as a legal cemetery now. So we have a legal church cemetery in Mendocino County, California, for green burials. And Morning Glory is interred there. Yeah. And so it seemed to me that the calling then was to travel. And I started getting invitations from various lovely ladies, and as well as festivals and gatherings and bookstores to come and visit and hit the road. So I've been doing that. I spent a month in Guatemala with my lovely lady Belladonna, who is also named Belladonna, but with only one N. And that I had met, oh my goodness, 35 years ago during the Unicorn Tours at the Renaissance Festival. And she still does Renaissance Festivals. That's what she does. And so in the space in between the fairs, she has a little time. And what we've always done is traveled together. We've traveled all over Europe. We traveled to Peru. We traveled to Mexico. And this summer we traveled to Guatemala, where I had an invitation to come down and do presentations. And it was quite an amazing event, and I chronicle all this stuff. I'm keeping an ongoing journal of my adventures on Walkabout on Facebook. So if anybody wants to see, all they got to do is go to my Facebook page over on Zelle, and you can read the journal of the adventure, which probably eventually will be put together in a book or something, and taking lots of pictures and making amazing connections with incredible people everywhere I go. And now I've been driving across the country. I began the whole walkabout on June 15th and celebrated summer solstice up at our land of Onavin. And since then, I've been just on the road, driving single-handedly. And it's kind of weird. I've done a lot of driving around the country, but always with people. It's always been a road trip with several other folks. And we take turns driving and stuff. And now I'm just doing it myself. And I'll tell you, day after day of eight-hour driving across the country from city to city is it's grinding. It's much more than I realized it would be.
Oh, I'm really grateful I have Dusty driving for me. You know, sometimes though, when you're in the car by yourself for long periods like that, deity will just talk to you and you get huge.
Oh yeah.
Especially when you're going
absolutely. And that's what I've been doing. I haven't even been listening to the radio or playing music or anything. I've just been letting my mind just the thoughts flow and conversations with the gods and Morning Glory and all that stuff and ideas that I then, when I have a chance to land somewhere for a few hours at a motel or something like that, then I'll write more and keep up the journal. My path is, I'll be in Missouri for the next few days and then heading off to Pennsylvania, where I'll be spending 3 weeks in Pennsylvania and doing a great big event, which is what my deadline on travel, at the Order of Avalon store in Lebanon, Pennsylvania. That's going to be huge. But I'm also doing an event, next Monday, is it? At the Pathways bookstore in St. Louis, which was established and owned and run by my first teacher in the craft, Deborah Letter, Deborah Bourbon, as she was in later life, who died of cancer in 2013. And the story is still continuing, so they're having me come into a big event there. Last night, I did a big book signing and talk at the Next Millennium in Omaha. And prior to that, I did a gig in Salt Lake City that was very well attended. And so I'm interspersing with that, visiting individual people. Tonight, I'm just visiting friends here in Kansas City. And we just went and had a movie night with a few people and watched Practical Magic and talked about it afterwards. And now I'm on the phone talking to you. And this is where it's going. My path was this year is taking me to Salem, Massachusetts, where from the beginning of October, which is of course the 1 month that Salem, Massachusetts, really comes alive. Through the winter, I'll be staying there with Gypsy Ravish of White Light Pentacles.
That is, I was going to say, you have got to stay with Gypsy. We have plans for you. And that new Aeon bookstore with the Cosmic Connection.
Yep.
I told her she needs to
that.
Meet you outside of that Cosmic Connection. I'm so glad that's going to happen.
Yep. That's where I'm going. And, you know, who knows how it'll go. Gypsy and Richard had very much the same kind of relationship of Morning Glory and I had, which is really an unusual one, the wizard and the witch, the priest and the priestess. And since we're both widows, we've kind of been looking at each other across the country and wondering if maybe there might be something there. So she invited me to come and stay with her for a while. So, we'll see how that goes. I don't relish winter in New England. I escaped the snow years ago, and I hope never to go back to it.
You know,
but,
it is
you know.
Beautiful up there, though. Have you ever been in the Cosmic Connection?
Yes, I was there just last year. See, every time I've been in Salem, it's always been for Halloween. I've never been there before or after October. But the Cosmic Connection is awesome. I saw it when Richard was just beginning work on it, and he showed me around. And then I saw it last year, it's all completed and magnificent. And oh, my goodness. And the idea that I might be working in that and be priesting with Gypsy and that we can do some stuff together and it's very exciting, but I don't want to try to build up too many expectations because we just have to see how it's going to go. But it could be awesome. It really could.
It's just standing in that room. It's just the Axis Mundi of the world. You know, it's really powerful. Richard did an amazing job. If you've got
unbelievable.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
If you're ever in Salem, I'm talking to our listeners. If you're ever in Salem, you got to go to New Aeon Bookstore and see the Cosmic Connection. There's an entry fee, but it is worth every penny. You just have to do that. That's a must see.
Right.
That's like seeing the Gore
really
Palace or what, Wall Drug.
Yeah, it's definitely a place of pilgrimage. It's like going to some great ancient temple. So I'm very excited about that, and we'll see where it goes. So there's that. And while I'm on the road, I'm certainly soliciting support from people out there who want to kind of help sponsor my travel. So I have a Patreon page that people can make donations to if they wish and subscribe to. So, you know, I've got lots of people just kicking in $1 a month, and that helps to pay for gas and motels and meals and car repairs and maintenance on the road, you know, so. It's all a thing. I have no idea how long this will go, but here it is.
Yeah, even if you can just give $1 a month, as many people as you have touched, as many people as you have changed lives, you know, you are still just giving yourself to the world. You've been doing that since you got here, and you have certainly had an impact on everybody who calls themselves pagan and a lot of people who don't. And I'm glad that that's working out for you and that you're getting to do all of this traveling. You know, we were worried about you, and then you started up that Patreon, and it's really worked. And I encourage people to get on there and give what you can to your grandfather, you know, while he's here to enjoy it, right?
Well, thank you. I've been looking around lately, and I'm really the last one standing of the old days. You know, there isn't anybody else who's still alive who goes back to those founding days of the early 60s. And I'm carrying with me then all of those people, all of their memories and their stuff and the conversations we've had together and the history and everything, as well as the archives I've got in file boxes in storage that I hope to be able to once again make available to people. So I'm trying to do whatever service I can in what time I have remaining. I've been having a lot of interesting readings and stuff lately, from Mayan stuff down in Guatemala to, you know, tarot readings at the various stores I've gone to. And all of them are essentially congruent on the idea that this is my current work and destiny and assignment is to do exactly what I'm doing now, to travel around and go directly to the people and connect with people personally, not just through writings and books and publications and interviews, but face-to-face, you know,
well,
meetups. And it's been wonderful. And I think it's my job right now.
It's truly meeting you and getting to talk to you in person is something that can't be described. Your energy is so big, but it's so loving and it's like, you don't, it's humble. It's real. Your love is just palpable. And I think that getting to experience that for people is really life-changing. It's very transformational. Getting to just experience you in person, it's not the same. You know, you can read books and listen to radio stations, but if you get an opportunity to go see Oberon in person, it's just that much more fantastic. You know, everything that you do is awesome, Oberon. You've given us so much. I really appreciate you coming and spending your time with us here tonight and taking time out of your busy schedule. Thank you so much for all that you do for us. It is just overwhelming and awe-inspiring to look at the scope of what you have done since you have been on the planet. You are an incredible role model, and we all hope that we can do you proud with what we do coming after you, because you have certainly rolled out the red carpet for the rest of us. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Bella. One is glad to be of service.
Well,
all right.
That's the Mastered Wizard for us, you guys. Thank you so much for listening. And we will come back later with wrapping up the show.
Wow, what a great interview. That was Lady Belladonna Laveau of Aquarian Tabernacle Church with Oberon Zell. Up next, Lady Belladonna interviews Gavin Bone.
Hi, this is Belladonna Laveau with the Global Wiccan Summit, and I am really excited today because our guests are Janet Farah and Gavin Bone. A native Londoner, Janet was initiated by Alex and Maxine Sanders in 1970. It is where she met her husband-to-be and co-author Stuart Farah, who initially became involved around Alex Sanders as a reporter for The Reveal. And was then asked to write What Witches Do, which is an incredible book. It's the first book that I read on witchcraft. Janet Owen, later Farah, became involved in the craft after a friend started regularly visiting the Sanders. Janet, being from a Christian background, went along to dissuade her friend from becoming involved, but was impressed by the moral structure that Wicca had and joined the Sanders Coven. Stuart and Janet first met when Stuart was asked to script and narrate A Witch is Born. After receiving their third degrees from Alex Sanders, they left Alex and Maxine's coven to form their own. They had found much of Alex's teaching sparse in content and developed their own ritual structure as well as training methods during this time. They married in 1972 and moved to the Republic of Ireland in 1976. Stuart passed away in February 2000 following a series of illnesses, but Janet continued her work as a priestess and author. With her late husband, she has written over a dozen books on the craft to date, titles which include Eight Sabbats for Witches, The Witch's Way, which was one of the first to suggest the Southern Hemisphere turn for festivals in Australia, The Witch's Goddess, The Witch's God, Spells and How They Work. Janet has also had one book published jointly with Virginia Russell, The Magical History of the Horse. and with her current partner, Gavin Bone, 3 books, The Pagan Path, The Healing Craft, The Dictionary of European Gods and Goddesses, Inner Mysteries, and their latest work, Lifting the Veil, which is a fantastic book and a must read. Their books have become some of the most influential in witchcraft and have set the mold for modern craft writers worldwide. They have lectured both in the United States and Netherlands and are now exploring the field of video as a way of presenting information in the modern pagan movement. Since her initial introduction to the Alexandrian craft with Stuart, she, with Gavin Bone, has developed her own unique brand of witchcraft and has been have been honorary initiations into several other traditions, including traditional Italian strega. She prefers just to be called witch rather than be considered any specific tradition. In 1999, she became ordained as third-level clergy with the Aquarian Tabernacle Church and is the religious affairs officer for the Aquarian Tabernacle Church in Ireland. Janet strongly believes in the idea of Wicca being both progressive and dynamic, while remaining a clergy to those dedicated to serving the god and goddess. An amazing lifetime worth of work. Gavin Bone, born in Portsmouth, was originally initiated into sex Wicca in 1986. He trained as a registered nurse, is a practicing spiritual, naturally empathic healer, and a trained reflexologist. He developed a fascination with the theory that Wicca's roots are in tribal shamanistic healing traditions rather than medieval ritual magic and their related secret societies. He has studied shamanism in a Northern European context with particular focus on the runes. He met Janet and Stuart Farah in 1989 at the Pagan Link Conference in Leicester, and moved to Ireland in 1992 after accompanying them on a tour of the United States. He co-authored The Pagan Path, The Healing Craft, and The Complete Dictionary of European Gods and Goddesses with Janet and Stuart. In the UK, he was both a Pagan Link and Pagan Federation contact in the early 90s, and this led him, after his move to Ireland, to set up the Pagan Information Network, a contact network for the Republic and the North of Ireland. I'm trying to get my phone to stop beeping at me. Like Janet, he was an honorary member of the Strega tradition and ordained third-level clergy with the Aquarian Tabernacle Church. Both Janet and Gavin tour regularly, doing intensive workshops in the United States and Europe, and just recently have had successful tours in Australia and New Zealand. They believe strongly in the idea of Wicca being both progressive and dynamic in nature while remaining a clergy of those dedicated to serving the gods and goddesses. They are responsible for setting up several progressive covens in the United States, United Kingdom, and Europe. They have published together The Inner Mystery, which emphasizes the non-dogmatic creativity of Wicca. Their major area of work at present is teaching deity connection and trans prophecy. Their most recent work, Lifting the Veil, A Witch's Guide to Trance Prophecy, Drawing Down the Moon, and Ecstatic Ritual, is the most extensive work on these subjects to date and a riveting read. Welcome, Janet and Gavin. Such a pleasure to have you here on the Global Wicked Summit. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Belladonna, darling.
Oh, I just, where to start? You know, I love Lifting the Veil. It is such a wonderful book, and I'm so excited that you're going to come here to teach it next summer. But let's talk, you know, the thing that I love most about you guys is that you have taken the rote, memorize these things and do these things, and the magic will happen to feel the energy, know the rules, and then feel the energy and work within the energy present. And that's how I practice. And I just love working with you guys because it's easy to just slip into that energetic moment and do magic together. So that is such a gift that you have given to the Wiccan community. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
So what do you have to say about the crazy trends in the world today and where you think Wicca's going with
okay,
it?
Okay, Bella, let me go first, darling. If you could see me now, I've got steam coming out of my ears.
Okay, tell us.
Well, when you sent us a questionnaire, you asked, amongst other things, how we saw the difference between Wicca and witchcraft. Well, I want to backtrack here, because one of the things that was not mentioned is that my main teacher wasn't the Sanders, it was Doreen Valiente. Now, she was the real mother of modern witchcraft and an amazing down-to-earth lady. And as back in those days, all of the Wiccans called our religion Wicca, but we were witches. We didn't differentiate between the two. And what I'm seeing today is a rather worrying trend, and let me explain to you why. We are talking to adults here, not to children. The problem that we saw in the past was a terrifying problem for witches. It started, if I believe correctly, in America, and it spread to Europe, and it was a paranoia, satanic child abuse. Now, even the FBI said it was rubbish. It was not happening. But these people made the press and they made the headlines, and the fingers were pointed at the witches, that we were doing terrible things to children. And it resulted in, there was a terrible case in the Orkney Islands in Scotland and in Rochdale in England, where children were taken away from their parents, little tiny children, and they were put through hell, these little ones, before finally being returned to their parents. And the parents were cleared of any charges whatsoever, but not before the children had been subjected to the most horrendous medical examinations and psychological stress and trauma. The ones that happened up in Scotland, they weren't even witches at all, they were Quakers. And these children were snatched in the middle of the night by police helicopters. It was that frightening. Well, unfortunately, what I'm seeing today is a terrible trend, where there is a group of young people, and sometimes not necessarily all that young, who are saying, well, we're not Wiccans, we're witches. They have no idea, half of them, what they're doing. And I'm not being derogatory to those that are genuinely trying to study, but they have an attitude that none of you can teach us anything. And I even have one young lady reply when I pointed out that their attitude to some of the things that were going on the internet, like, how do I have a spell to kill my grandfather so I can inherit his money? But these people are being watched. We are being watched. All of these come up and they are flagged. And this is not paranoia. This is fact. By putting these kind of things up on the internet and acting as if we don't need responsibility, we can do whatever we damn well like and call ourselves witches and practice witchcraft, they are pointing that red flag to the ball. And again, it will happen all over again.
Yeah, there is already a couple of cases which indicate where it's already starting. So this is where our first thing we're talking about is a specific warning, which isn't discussed here. We've already seen it in England, where the concept of satanic ritual abuse has popped up again. We're an actor, being pointed at an actor. And I have no doubt in the States again with the current rise of evangelicalism, because the political situation, that's going to come up again. So our big problem at the moment is that as a community, we're seeing things which are actually fracturing it and not bringing it together. And a lot of it is the terminology we're using and the changes that have gone on. So this really comes into some of the questions that I know you wanted to ask, you asked us, how did we define Wicca? Well, that's the question that's really been going on for 50 years now. And every generation seems to change it. As Janet said, when she came into the craft around Doreen Valiente, everybody just called themselves witches. Wicca was a really useful term. We don't even pronounce it right with two C's. It's an Anglo-Saxon word, so it should be Wisha or Wisha, depending on your gender. Gerald Gardner, and you'll see it with Ray Buckland as well, they used only one C. But I remember when I came into the craft in the 80s, there was a saying, all Wiccans are witches, but not, sorry, all witches are pagans, but not all pagans are witches. Then somehow come the 90s and the 2000s, that changed. It changed to all Wiccans are witches, but not all witches are Wiccans. Somebody started to move goalposts. Okay, so you've got this historical aspect of where the word Wicca comes from, which is an Anglo-Saxon word, which means to bend or shape. In this context, natural forces around you. And now we also face the fact that it has developed modern usage through Gardner. And unfortunately, these words, when we start to define Wicca and witch as separate, then we start to fragment our community, and that's one of the issues we see at the moment.
And also we have an interesting thing here. You point out witchcraft in different countries. We in the Western world are able to use that word witch. I mean, here in Ireland, it's a legal religion. But if you go to South Africa, don't call yourself a witch, because if you call yourself a witch out there, you are talking of people who put death curses on people, and they are feared, terribly feared by the populace. The equivalent, say, for example, in South Africa, to what we call witchcraft here, you know, in that beneficent sense, are the Sangoma, the spiritual healers of South Africa. And we attended Sangoma ceremonies where they honoured us, and they honoured our witchcraft dead from the burning times, and saw us as Sangoma.
That's scary. That's scary. I get a lot of emails from people in South Africa, and they're very scared down there about their political situation.
Yes, they are. It's an interesting country. We were there in 2008, and things were a little bit better then from what I can understand. But you've also got to be careful about what you hear. But no, they were worried about it back then. It's always, there's a certain degree of political instability there, which has been there for a while. It's certainly not as bad as other African countries by any means, though. But we spent 2 days with the Lesotho Sangoma, and we were very, very honoured by being made honorary elders, because the spirits had told them, the ancestral spirits had told them to make us elders. We were very honoured by that. Their magic is very simple. It's very simple. And it's, the best way to describe it is a sort of proto-form of ether. It's more shamanistic than you would see, for example, of West African magic. It's absolutely what they do. It's very, very simple, very, very beautiful, and it's centered around the ancestral spirits. And they read. You get read for your animal rather than your, basically, your lower. That's the best way to describe it, reach your lower. You get read for an animal. But there was this crossover occurring then, and we've seen that in different places. We saw it in Australia as well, with some elements of the community crossing over with the Koori Aborigine on the east coast of Australia, a certain degree with the Maori in New Zealand. And it's what we should strive for.
Especially you mentioned here, for example, on the form you sent us, about underground Wiccan traditionalists. I hate to say it, they're going to go, a lot of them are going to go the way of the dinosaur. Simply because traditional ideas of Wicca, going back to Gardner and to Sanders, are outmoded and outdated. They cannot carry on the way they are. Now, I know people who are traditional witches will be really upset at that statement. But again, it's not meant to upset them. It's to point out that you have to be more open. You have to be more aware of your surroundings, the people you live with. And your religion, because it is for us a religion, cannot be swept under the carpet with secret type ceremonies and statements that we are the great I am and we are this, that and the other. That doesn't cut it any longer.
You've got to remember, Wicca's only now, really, 60 years young.
Yes.
That's nothing compared with other religious groups. And so Wicca's have been reconstructing itself, and I'll be blunt, it's been reconstructing. It's a modern tradition, which gets back into that definition, created by Gerald Gardner. It's a modern tradition of witchcraft. And as time has gone on, it certainly isn't the same as it was in Gardner's day. But when you lay things down in stone in a tradition, it doesn't allow growth. And I had this conversation recently with somebody actually online, that all traditions which survive are living. They change culturally, and you can see that in the British folk traditions. For example, if you go down to Bealtaine, the Beltane in Cornwall, you can go to Padstow to see the Obios, which is the traditional hobby horse which is paraded around the village. And that changed over several hundred years. You no longer have one Obios, you now have several. You have the red team, the blue team, and then the schools have brought in their Obioses. But it's a tradition. And this is what we have to realize, that Wicca is not something which is stagnant. It evolves and changes with culture. And many of the things we think in Wicca are traditional really aren't. A lot of it is coming out of books. For example, the Maid, Mother and Cone Triple Goddess is directly out of Robert Graves. And of course, it's really a reference to Diva Triformis from Rome. It's not Celtic, it's not Saxon, it's not Northern European. It's purely out of Rome that Robert Graves is talking about. And that's really modern in the whole scheme of things. So Wicca is an evolving tradition which draws its roots back to ancient times. So without any doubt, all of it is reconstruction. And yes, you will come across those who say, well, I can claim it back, going back hundreds of years in my family. And generally, if you really push them on it, the ones that are genuine about this, you will find what they have is little fragments of folk magic tradition, but no system. Over to you.
So that's when people are telling you that they've got witchcraft hundreds of years back in their family, it's not really a full-blown tradition as we see it in our heads. It's just
there is one exception.
I got practices. Me and my grandmother used to dance around the coffin in her front yard. She wasn't
right,
a witch, though.
No, exactly, but it was little fragments. I mean, we've seen this because we worked a lot in Italy, and we've come across people who are practicing stregoria, as it's called here in the States, as it's called in the States. And in Italy, we say, well, this is what they say is traditional stregoria in America. And we go to the Italians and they say, oh, every family knows about that. There's a tradition of actually putting olive oil into a bowl of water and whisking it around and using it for divination to see your loved one. And just about every family in Italy does it.
Wow.
So this is what I mean. The one exception I've come across, interestingly enough, and it's where we tend to use this term craft, and we assume that comes from witchcraft. The exception is that is to do with Freemasonry. And whether we like it or not, we have to accept elements that are in Wicca come from Freemasonry. And those elements, though, are not coming from the modern period. Freemasonry in the British Isles changed at the end of the 1700s. What happened is they created Masonic groups, were all independent, and many of them were practicing magic. And they were actually working systems, and they're famous people who were part of that process. For example, Sir Isaac Newton, who was also the well-known scientist, the creator of gravity and several laws of physics. He was actually one of these people who was craft. He was one of the Freemasons. Okay?
That when you look at anything Freemasonry, it looks like the people who had money and education took their Wicca or their paganism or their witchcraft or whatever you want to call it.
Originally all of these weren't.
Pre-us.
Put
it into this boys club system so that they could keep it alive and then like hid it inside what was safe.
Yeah, that came later. That's the fascinating thing. When in the 1800s, beginning of the late 1700s, early 1800s, they formed in Britain a Grand Lodge. that's when it all changed. Many of those previous lodges basically just said, no, we're not joining the Grand Lodge, and carried on doing their own thing. And this is where you get that famous witch that we hear about sometimes. Nobody's quite sure sometimes where he fits in, and that's Robert Cochrane. What became known in America as the 1734 tradition, which is a spin-off from him, because he always said his family were craft. But if you look, he talks about the kind of Tubal Cain and everything, and that's from those old Masonic lodges, which were pre-Grand Lodge, which survived. So that's the only aspect you see of survivals. The exceptions, of course, are Italian Strega. But Strega means something very different in Italy than the way people talk about it sometimes in the States. In Italy, a Strega is generally an old woman, generally in the wine district, who lives up the side of the hill with everybody else. And that's where the woman the wives go to when they think their husband's having an affair, and she puts a hex on the potential mistress. That's the sort of stuff they do. And they work with saints.
Yeah, I remember you saying that when you say we don't curse anybody at workshops in America, you get, no, we don't curse anybody. And then when you say that in Italy, they all look at you like, why wouldn't we curse people?
Very different ethics.
So I wanted to ask you, I want to go back to something that you talked about earlier, Janet. You said that traditional Wicca was going the way of the dinosaur. And one of the reasons that I think that is because of the hiding it, the secrecy. You know, it's so hard to find traditional Wiccans or traditional witchcraft, whatever, however you want to say it, the old guard, because they're real secretive and they don't get out and say, hey, this is who we are, this is what we're doing. And they're not working on the greater scale to make a difference in the world, the community around them, because they're very insular. And a lot of millennials really want that, let's all get together and change our world perspective in their religion.
A lot of the old guard, you've got to remember, a lot of them are very old now, basically, you know, like me in their dotage, getting to the stage where, I mean, they're beginning to die off. But yes, they do come out. You see them more in Europe. They come out and give public talks at events, etc. But I think there's actually, she won't mind me quoting her on this. I think sometimes what you don't see in America, you see more of in Europe, because people, when they're dealing with America, are a little bewildered. And a classic example of that was poor Maxine Sanders, who, when she'd been over to the States, she came back and she was doing an interview here, and that's why she won't mind me quoting her, because it was public knowledge. And she said, but they keep asking so many questions. They almost wanted to know how many fillings I've got in my head. I'm afraid I'm a very staid English lady, and I found that a bit off-putting, quite frankly.
Oh, no.
That tends to be the attitude. You know, I was subjected to America at a young age, so to speak, the mere age of 41. And I just fell in love with the openness, because I've always had a wicked sense of humour. And although I take my craft and my spirituality and my priestessly duties very seriously, I have to laugh at myself. And therefore, I enjoy being the public clown sometimes and being completely crazy. I mean, I've done everything from mud wrestling to have custard pies thrown in my face for charity in the craft, you know. And I just love being the village idiot sometimes.
One of the most charming clowns anyone could ever come in contact with, I'm sure.
You're very gracious. Thank you, darling.
We've sort of developed, I mean, there has been, it started from what I can see, sort of end of the 1980s, 1990s, you saw Wicca sort of evolved initially into two streams. You had those that were calling themselves Wicca who did not classify themselves as Gardnerian or Alexandrian, and that is certainly myself. You had those who were basically Alexandrian and Gardnerian, which of course you got this naming in the 90s, the end of the 90s, of this term British traditional Wicca, which I can tell you now the British find very confusing because they never use it and they're told they should. So you had these two streams, and then when everything in the 90s, when you started to get films like The Craft, you had this other stream appear, where you had all these younger people come in, and it's occurring again now, and they don't really take it that seriously. They're just interested in the magic.
They want spells, instantaneous magic,
so you have this,
and that's it.
You have this middle grouping who would consider themselves to be Wiccan. And certainly Janet and Stuart went into that. Others,
I think that, don't you think that's the beginning? Like, people are like, oh, I want to learn about this magic, and then they find the goddess and they go into it, or
right.
They don't find the goddess and they leave?
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's the middle stream, you see, where you've got sometimes people come in from the either side. You get people who come into very traditional carvings and go, well, that's not really for me. Or they open up what they're doing, and we've seen that happen a lot. They realize that, and they keep very quiet to the rest of their tradition what they're doing. Sometimes it leaks out. That certainly happened in the States with Proteus. They found they had to leave the Gardnerian tradition because they were doing basically same-sex initiations. Then you have, what happens is you get almost like a middle ground who are very focused on realizing, hey, we're here to do a job. This is what I saw in Wicca, is that you had these closed off traditions, covens, where it was about secrecy, and they really were not doing the job, simple as that. They were priests and priestessing for each other in the coven rather than the community as a whole. I'm not talking about the pagan community. I'm talking about everybody outside as well. And this is something we learned in Ireland. Because here in Ireland, you call yourself a witch. It's not other witches who knock on the door. It's local people wanting help.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing that's happened to Wicca, too. It's like, you know, you start out wanting to learn how to do magic for yourself and make your life work, right? You feel this calling, and you learn about witchcraft, and then you start realizing that you know, now we have all these people who have all these needs who have an affinity for the goddess but don't want to be clergy.
Right.
And that didn't happen 20, 30 years ago.
The change occurs, and it's very, very interesting. If you look at books prior to the late 1980s, the word spirituality, you don't find it in books on witchcraft. Right? It's not there. Nobody uses the word spirituality related to witchcraft. And then it begins to change.
Yeah.
And you begin to see more books begin to appear and use that term. You get more people talk about environmental issues. Bless Starhawk for that one. And you also see another change. And that is how we view divinity. When I first, the first coven I joined, I got basically told, this is the name of the god and the goddess. Right? That was it. You didn't work with any of the others. Right? Araja and Kanunos, that's it. That's who you work with. But what has changed is that as time has gone on, people have begun to realize they want to make connection to the divine. And that's the major change that's occurred. And that's, with that has come an understanding of what the term being a priest or priestess is. They begin to realize it's about service to the divine and service to humanity and the world as a whole and nature. So what you now get is an actual spiritual priesthood. Priesthood stops being a title that people wanted. Oh, I want this great title. I want to call myself a high priest or high priestess. Now they realize it's a vocation, and that title is something that has to be earned, because that title is not a title. That title is a job description. It's what you do.
Yeah, you have to earn that title every day in Wicca. They
yeah.
don't just let you have it and sit on it.
It becomes about service. The problem is when you have what you see with the closed off traditions as such, is that's not what it's about, because the system they are working is more important than the divine connection, and that's where the problem is. And it's the same with the younger people coming in. They're all about magic. And when you start to talk about gods and goddesses related to magic, they get very, very touchy. So, well, we're not interested in the religion. This is what we have seen occurring.
Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. Unfortunately, we've gone over a little bit, but it's okay because it's Pagan Radio. Pagans are used to Pagan Standard Time. But it has been so fascinating to get to talk to you guys. Thank you for bringing your wisdom and your knowledge to the Global Wiccan Summit.
We now have to go and let the kitten out, or as we say, release the kraken.
They're so much fun at that age. What kind of kitten is it?
Ginger Tom. Oh. Going to be long-haired. It's terribly cute.
He keeps
thinking my boob is mummy.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us today. I love getting to talk to you. Do you have why don't you tell us what you got coming up so we can see you when you're out and about?
At the moment, well, you will obviously see us next year. We are going to be in Oregon.
Yay!
For a festival out in Oregon next June. And of course, obviously, we're going to be coming to see you and basically doing a trance possession weekend, which has been our main work for a while now, is that level of deity connection.
I'm so excited. I cannot wait.
Yeah. That's what we've got planned for next year. We're not traveling as much as we used to at the moment.
We're taking a break because we've redecorated part of the house and we're just getting a breather.
Well, I have seen the cottage pictures on the internet, and it is beautiful work. And y'all have certainly deserved to have a break. It is wonderful talking to you. You have a fantastic day. Give me your web address, though, so that anybody that wants to find you has the web address.
Okay, my darling love.
I will.
Love to both of you.
What's the web address for to find you guys?
Just coming up. It's www.kaliak.com.
Kaliak.com. That's CALAIGHE.
.com.
All right. Y'all have a great time, and I will see you next summer.
And
you
see
certainly
you
will, babe.
Bye.
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 Well, that was another fantastic interview with Archpriestess Belladonna Laveau, Reverend Gavin Bone, and Lady Janet Farrar. Up next, we have Ted Ursus interviews Reverend Donald Murphy of Beehai Covenant Church in Louisiana.
Greetings, everyone. We're here with Reverend Ronald Murphy, the High Priest of the Beehai Covenant. Ronald, would you like to say anything to introduce yourself?
I am Ronald Murphy. I am a third degree high priest with Beehai Coven. I help run the classroom for our group. Other than that, I'm just help keep a foundation for our coven and keep it strong, keep it growing.
So, as a high priest, what is your role within Wicca?
I see my role as, like I said, as a foundation, as someone to people can come to for advice or if they have questions. Be one of the people that's out in front, actually showing people that Wicca isn't this drama that's made up in Hollywood, that we're actual people that work 9-to-5 jobs, and instead of going to a church, we go to parks, we go to, we worship out in nature. We don't necessarily go in a building to worship.
Okay. So your community there, what's it like?
Well, here we have it's a varied community. Being in New Orleans, we have a lot of voodoo practitioners. We have Santeria. We have Lucumi. We have a few other traditions other than Wicca, and we always try and work together because we want it to be strong. We want everybody to know that you have support outside of just your group, that we're all here for each other.
And so what actually brought you guys together? What were the origins of your group down there?
Well, the way it started was my wife actually started taking classes with our previous coven, and I was just there with, as a, I guess you can say, a church husband, as a helper, and just everything started to fit to what I was looking for. So then I started taking classes, and as I grew within it, we decided to hive off and start our own tradition, and we just kind of have been feeling our way through and just making, you know, making the best decisions we can and finding what fits for us.
And what is the legal status of your coven?
We're a 501c3 legal church or coven under the umbrella of ATC.
So you, in that last statement, you talked about both church and coven. What do you feel are the differences, the similarities? Would you care to touch on that a little bit?
Well, a lot of it's just semantics. Because if you tell people that you're in a coven, they automatically think, you know, running around hooded cloaks late at night, doing things that aren't exactly, you know, on the up and up. But if you compare a church and a coven, you say that my coven is my church, then you can kind of bridge the gap between religions. And people don't see it as being something bad. When you can take the words that you have and make it where people, in the terms they understand, it makes it a little less scary for them or a little less apprehensive when they're talking about it.
So it seems like you guys do a lot of stuff in person, but a lot of the groups that I've found on a lot of the pagans that I've found have been studying online. They meet online, they talk online. What do you feel are the benefits of being in person versus online and vice versa?
Well, we do all of our classes are they're housed online, but we like to have our secret class in person because we get to know the people. We doing online, you know, online training, because I used to help run the online classroom before, and people would just wouldn't feel the connection for it. They might do everything, then they might decide, you know, okay, I'm not going to worry about doing it this week, or I'm not going to worry, you know, and they suddenly just start to fade away, where they just don't finish. With online, with in person, you actually get to meet the people and get to know them, because if they're your close group, then you want to know what makes them tick. You want to know, okay, this person likes wearing red, so I'm not going to go buy them something for Yule that's green because they're not going to like it. Mm-hmm. Things like that. With the online, like I said, you don't really get that personal connection. You get a computer connection to them. You know, you get to see the face that they put out, but you don't get to know them really.
Absolutely. So, with regard to some of those classes, I know that Wicca is a mystery tradition, and for a very long time we had to, you know, because of the way that most of the public we were portrayed in the public eye and how they perceived us, we had to be secretive. Do you feel that secrecy still has a place within Wicca?
Some things I think are good to keep secret. But our main objective at Beehive is to bring Wicca into the mainstream. Let people know that it's not this, you know, not what, like I said, what you see on Hollywood where, you know, we're sacrificing animals to call a demon. And that's what everybody sees when they say, when you say Wicca, that's what they think. They think The Craft, they think all these movies where they portray it as being something evil. I think certain things need to be kept secret just on the basis of, if we told everybody how to run, they wouldn't know how to walk first. So if you put everything out there, then why do they need to come to class? Why do they need to take classes and actually learn the core material if they already know how to, we'll just say, quote unquote, fly on a broom without knowing how to, you know, make the broom and put all the energy into it to make it fly?
Understandable. So what value do you feel that, you know, we're talking at the Global Wicca Summit. So what value does Wicca offer the world, in your opinion?
I think Wicca offers a balance. You see a lot of religions that push down on the female deity. They've kind of moved away from it. They've wanted to focus more on the masculine, and that's, you're missing half of the equation with that. We like to look at it as a duality. You know, you have a mom and a dad. You have the masculine energy and the female energy. So if you take away part of that, you're missing that half. So to me, Wicca offers balance to the world. It gives you both the masculine and feminine to make you into a complete person.
So before, you know, we disconnect, is there anything else you feel that we need to really talk about as part of this? Any message that you have for the world?
One thing I would say is, like, you know, with the Wiccan read, it says, "End it, harm none, do as you will." We know that you can't go through everything not harming anything. So my message is, be the best you can, and each day, be better than that.
That's beautiful. Thank you very much. And blessed be.
Thank you, and blessed be.
Hello, my name is Phoenix, and in this video, I'm going to be discussing the role of magic in the Wiccan belief. So first of all, I think it's important to take a look at the word witch itself. The word witch is generally roughly defined as someone who practices magic or sorcery or spellcraft. But the word witch has its origins in Old English and was originally the word Wicca or Wiki. So clearly there is a very strong connection between Wicca and witchcraft, or the practice of magic. Many people think of Wicca as the same as witchcraft. However, I would disagree with that, because Wicca is a religious belief system and not just the practice of magic. Some people try to separate the religion of Wicca from the practice of magic. However, I don't really think that it's possible to separate the two. The origins of Wicca. Wicca claims to be a earth-based spirituality that is a continuation of ancient pagan religious beliefs. The validity of such claims is questionable. However, modern Wicca arose in the early 1950s and has since then become a worldwide religious movement. So, how does Wicca, the religion, involve magic, the practice? The Wiccan religion consists of two principal forms of religious devotion and practice, which is the Sabbats, or the sun festivals, and the Esbats, or the moon festivals. The Sabbats are generally under the domain of the sun god and the masculine energy and the changing seasons, whereas the Esbats are more focused on the moon and the moon phases and the goddess and the feminine aspect of the divine force. So Wiccans honor the god and goddess through these two different types of celebrations, and the way that they do so involves magical practices. A typical Sabbat celebration consists of casting the circle, calling the quarters, and then enacting a seasonal motif or a seasonal play, or having some kind of talk about the season or the changing season, which depends on which of the eight Sabbats are being celebrated. The act of casting a circle and calling the quarters is actually a form of magic. Now, how is magic defined? I like to use Aleister Crowley's famous definition of magic as being creating change in accordance with will. However, I like to add an extra little bit onto that and consider magic to be creating change in accordance with will through the manipulation of subtle energies. So the magic circle is a psychological construct, if you will, from a scientific perspective, that alters the emotional headspace or the emotional headspace that participants are in. So that is creating a change. It may be an internal change, but nevertheless, it's a change. When one invokes the quarters, they are essentially pulling the four directions from all corners of the universe and bringing them into the circle. That is also a form of energy manipulation, which brings about a change. It may be emotional, it may be psychological, but nevertheless, there is a change in the participants that are performing these rites. So, the general Sabbat layout conforms pretty well to the definition of magic as portrayed by Aleister Crowley. Now, when we look at Esbats, they get a lot more magical than the Sabbats do. First of all, the Esbat usually involves an act of spellcraft after or during the ritual. So an Esbat's main focus is to honor the goddess and the divine feminine, but again, it involves casting a circle and calling the quarters. Some witches don't do the quarter calls or circle casting, however, it is a traditional part of Wicca, the religion, regardless of what tradition you're practicing. Another pivotal part of an Esbat celebration is the act of calling down the moon. If you're in a group environment, usually the high priestess will do this. However, if you're a solitary, calling down the moon is a very intimate, personal experience between you and the goddess. I remember calling down the moon when I was a child, before I actually realized what I was doing. It was just kind of something I instinctually felt drawn to do, and then after I had learned about the craft, I realized that what I had been doing all these years was actually a modified form of an Esbat. So calling down the moon involves taking the essence of the moon energy and pulling it in through the crown of your head into your physical form and merging with it, becoming one with it. Now, after the priestess or whoever's doing it calls down the moon into them, they usually use this energy to channel out into spellcraft or to other members of the group, or they bring through channeled messages from the divine and there's all different kinds of directions that this practice can go to, flow into. Calling down the moon itself is a very powerful spiritual experience, just as it is. You can think of calling down the moon as invoking a spirit, becoming possessed by something, except you have a little bit more control. How much of the moon you pull into you is pretty much up to the individual. But nevertheless, calling down the moon involves pulling the moon's essence and energy and force into your being, into your body, and channeling it through you, usually to create change. Again, we see the same principle of creating change in accordance with will through the manipulation of subtle energies in both of these practices. So, that being said, Asbats and Sabbats are the cornerstones of Wiccan religious and Wiccan devotions. Since Wiccans generally don't go to church every Sunday, and we generally don't sing songs and say... Since Wiccans generally don't go to church every Sunday, the Sabbats and Asbats are very sacred, important times in our religious practice. And the fact that these two practices are so closely linked and intertwined with magic really goes to highlight the importance that magic itself has in the Wiccan faith. I hope you have enjoyed this video about magic and Wicca.
Wow, what a wonderful interpretation, his interpretation of Wicca. I absolutely loved hearing from Reverend Oberon Zell, Reverend Gavin Bone, Lady Jana Farrar. She touched on so many subjects that not many people talk about anymore. Fantastic. And I love the term grandfather. A lot of our elders, of course, as happens, do pass on and become our ancestors. Well, this is the end of our pre-recorded sessions. And again, I'm your host, Reverend Lori Blackman. I am the coordinator for the Global Wicca Summit, hosted by the Karelian Educational Ministries, put together by Karelian First Elder, the Right Reverend Ed Karel, for the Parliament of World Religion. This is an official Parliament of World Religion event. Us meeting the Karelian tradition, along with many members of the Aquarian Tabernacle Church and Lady Selena Fox, will be attending the Parliament in November, from November 1st through the 7th. Parliament is a very, very important aspect of why we're doing this, to talk about Wicca as a global faith. So we have one more full day of events going on. This evening, you can go tune in to Block Talk Radio, Pagans Tonight Radio, and listen to Reverend John Anastasio with the Right Reverend Lady Lori Denman, Reverend Anastasia Allen, Reverend Christina Murphy, talking about healing within Wicca, followed by a wonderful musical concert put together by PTRN station manager Reverend Pamela Kelly. Tomorrow, join myself and Karelian First Elder, the Right Reverend Ed Karel, for a town hall. This will be the ending 3 hours of the Global Wicca Summit. We're encouraging people to call in, voice your opinion, talk to us about what went on this week. Also tonight, at 11 p.m. Central, join Lady Elizabeth with Reverend Apu from the Philippines on Witch and Famous Radio, also on Blog Talk Network. For tomorrow's scheduling and everything else going on with Second Life through Sacred Cauldron, go to thedailyspell.com, Global Wicca Summit, pull down the schedule. We're adding things as we go, more people towards the end are looking to get involved, so you might have to check it. Check out Facebook pages, The Daily Spell Facebook page, the Witch School International Facebook page, Sacred Cauldron's Facebook page. Lady Belladonna has been very, very active with posting on her Facebook page. She's been a very, very big help with all of this. I have to give a shout out to Ted Ursus from Pagan Pathways. He did an amazing job interviewing people for us. All in all, it's been a wonderful event so far. And again, if you remember, please, tomorrow, tune in, join us, call in on Pagan Tonight Radio Network. We're going to do a town hall. And we would really, really love to hear from everyone and anyone. So until next time, may you blessed be.